You and I back together for a brand new week, Monday, May 24th, 2021, on Connecticut Today. In the 3 o'clock hour, we heard from a gentleman who had a long battle with sports gambling. He gave several warnings to folks who might find themselves susceptible to addictive behavior once Connecticut introduces online sports gambling and casino games as well. In the 4 o'clock hour, Governor Ned Lamont gave us the latest COVID-19 numbers, and I also had a few thoughts about this continuing push by some in Congress and locally to get rid of school resource officers. I want to talk about something that just I really hate sometimes to sound as partisan as I do. And listen, I know I'm partisan in some of my arguments. I'm not going to dispute that. But there are things that I read and I just say, why? Why? Now, we are concerned about our kids' safety, correct? Right? We're concerned about our kids' safety in school because we hear shootings. We hear these mass shootings in school, and they're awful. They're horrible. How many of us have thought, oh, my God, what would happen if this was my kid? Now, those mass school shootings are the kind of school shootings that, you know, those are the only kind a lot of times that Democrats react to because that's how they fundraise. They come out against the NRA, blah, 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 blah. But when something happens like in Chicago, like this past weekend again, 12 people killed in Chicago, 42 people wounded. Don't say anything about that. Why can't we say anything about it, Senator? Well, because it's black and brown people. Well, sir, that's a concern, isn't it? Yeah, but it's what those people do. Don't say anything. That's got to be the attitude, right? Because I've been looking at news sources all afternoon, and I haven't seen any sort of real political reaction from Congress, from one side of the aisle, to the fact that a dozen people were killed again in Chicago over the weekend. Another 42 wounded, with violence up in just about every major city across the country. But we know what kind of people that involves. Don't say anything. But if it was a school shooting in a suburb, oh, my God, they'd be out there. You couldn't get the satellite trucks out there fast enough. You couldn't put up the soapboxes fast enough. And then we have this. Then we have this, and I read this today, and really, really, in an age where we are worried about our kids and grandkids in school. From the New Haven Register, this was actually yesterday. It may have been in the Connecticut Post, but this is a Hearst Connecticut Media story. In the Register yesterday, Richard Chumney's story. As Connecticut lawmakers debate the future of police and schools, some local leaders oppose changes. The General Assembly is now weighing a bill that would create a task force. We have to have a task force, yes. You know what task force is a code for? Making like you're concerned about something when you really know that doing what you want to do is going to get people PO'd at you, so you do a task force. The General Assembly is weighing a bill that would create a task force to examine the role of school resource officers in public schools, and to recommend whether or not they should continue to be utilized. Yes, those are the police officers in not every school in the state, not every district, but they are generally put in schools, you know, for safety because of what happens. Says here in this story, about 147 officers were stationed in schools across Connecticut back in 2018, 3 years ago. So it's roughly 150 cops. Doesn't sound like a lot. Of the state's 113 school districts, 70 used school resource officers. So you have 70, a little over half of the 113 school districts in the state using some combination of 147 officers. Now, the far-left Democrats in Hartford, mainly, again, Bridgeport, Hartford, and New Haven, who else, they're the ones saying, well, we don't like how many people get arrested in urban schools. Several school board leaders worry that this proposed task force would reduce the power of parents have, the power parents have over the schools their kids attend. Well, that's the whole point. They want you to have less and less power. For example, it said Carlos Franco, a longtime resource officer at Greenwich High School, was actually the commencement speaker in 2018. Nearly a year after George Floyd was killed by a police officer in Minneapolis and sparked a nationwide movement against racial injustice and police misconduct, the debate around law enforcement in America continues to rage on. Now, here's my question. What, as again, as tragic as that was for what happened to George Floyd, that should have never happened because Derek Chauvin had complaints against him, which the police department in Minnesota, as told to me by a guest I had on years ago, recognized as a corrupt department in a Democrat-run city, why was this guy still on the job? But please explain to me, what does that have to do with keeping kids safe in schools? Again, what happened to Mr. Floyd was awful, but let's deal with that situation and not turn every freaking thing on its ear. For months, activists have called on state lawmakers to reform policing in schools. Why? Oh, I know why. Which they say disproportionately impacts students of color and contributes to the so-called school-to-prison pipeline. Now, if there is a problem in urban schools here in Connecticut with how many arrests are being made, who they're arresting, how frequent are these arrests, and if these arrests are in fact needed properly or improperly, then let's deal with that. And for God's sake, can the majority party in Hartford stop telling other districts what to do? Because if you read this story, some of these suburban districts have no problem with having a cop or police in their school during during school hours. Are there arrests going on in big city schools? Maybe there are. I suspect there will be. Why? Why are these students being arrested? Again, we can walk and chew gum at the same time. In Connecticut, says here, according to a 2019 study, black students who attend school with a police officer are twice as likely to face arrest than their white peers, while Latino students are six times more likely to be arrested. Okay, why? Is it bias from the police officer? Which it could be. Is it a bias from the school administrator? Which it could be. Or are they just doing stuff that requires them to be arrested? It could be. I don't know. Earlier this year, State Senator Gary Winfield, Democrat New Haven, introduced a separate bill in the current legislative session requiring the state to eventually phase out resource officers. Why? Why? Winfield's bill has not advanced in the General Assembly. Jeez, I wonder why. But the proposed legislation to study police presence in schools won support from the Assembly's Education Committee. Okay, good. Yeah, let's study it. Let's take a look. Do these kids being arrested in schools, are they showing weapons? Are they physically assaulting people? I don't know. But what I do know is just because something is happening with cops in certain areas or certain cities or certain schools in this state should not affect the use of police officers in other schools where maybe parents, students, teachers, administrators want them there. Maybe they want them there. Folks, I'm telling you, it makes my head hurt. It does. Any length of time over the past couple of years, I've tried to keep you updated on the soon-to-be presence, it appears, unless something out of the ordinary happens in the state Senate, soon-to-be appearance of legalized sports gambling and legalized casino gaming as well, coming here to Connecticut. A lot of people are concerned about that. Our next guest is the founder of Williamsville Wellness, and they help treat addictions and people addicted to things like sports gambling. In fact, NBC recently reported sports betting skyrocketed during the pandemic. So what about it coming to Connecticut? We'll get the opinion now of Robert Cabanis, who joins us. Robert, hi. It's Paul at WICC. How are you, sir?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing very, very well. What's your personal story here, Robert? I've read a little bit of it here, obviously, to prep, but man, you've had some ups and downs in your life, and now you're trying to help men and women with addictions, including to sports gambling, which we're getting here in Connecticut within a few months. A lot of people worried about that. Tell us a little about yourself.
Well, I'm a recovering alcoholic and a recovering gambling addict, and gambling was much worse than the alcoholism. I was a sports gambler for a long time, probably for 35 plus years.
Mm-hmm.
Lost a lot of money and founded Williamsville Wellness to treat specifically gambling addiction. And we've been open for 14 years. We've helped a lot of people, and we're seeing a pretty substantial increase of inquiries and people coming to Williamsville for gambling addiction with the advent of online sports gambling.
What, Robert, what got you hooked into the sports gambling? Now, you said years ago, obviously, when, you know, online sports gambling pretty much didn't exist, maybe in a few places. I know there are some offshore places, but how'd you get hooked?
Well, it was probably, I haven't gambled in 16 years, and I started gambling 54 years ago, so I probably gambled for 40 years. I started, I ran the football sheets at college until the dean said, you can't do that anymore. And dumb Bob, thinking he could beat the bookies, I had ended up at one point in time having four different bookies in four different states. It's just different people have different reasons they can't stop gambling. A lot of people chase. They lose $1,000 and they want to get that $1,000 back, and it costs them $1 million and they don't get it back. They keep chasing and chasing and chasing. I was not a chaser. I just didn't see my losses. Seeing a loss was too painful, so I just saw the wins. And until I figured out why the loss was so painful, I continued to gamble.
So you medicated yourself with the wins. You actually didn't have a cognitive grip, Bob, on the losses.
That's kind of it. Yes, it's not exactly it, but that's. I just couldn't see the losses, and I saw the wins as winning someone's love, and I couldn't take the loses, the loss, because I equated that to losing somebody's love. So it was just a very bad spiral, and I did it for a long time, and I lost millions of dollars, almost lost my marriage, but my wife is still with me after 52 years. But she's a wonderful, wonderful gal. And we opened Williamsville, like I said, 15 years ago. And it's been a very rewarding for me and for my wife.
Boy, the scenario, this whole thing, Bob, how it has changed. I mean, you yourself, use the word bookies a couple of minutes ago in our chat here, and you know what that is. I know what that is. They're around where you are. They're still around where I am. So we've seen this segue here, Bob, between something you kind of had to do in the shadows, and now in many states, including here in Connecticut, Bob Cabanis, we're going to see it on everybody's phones and everybody's computer screens in just a couple of months.
Well, the big one thing that I don't think people realize is when they started the lottery 50 years ago, 40 years ago, whatever it was, the main reason to start the lottery was to legalize the numbers racket and to get rid of the numbers racket. Well, they did that, and the numbers racket was gone in months. It was just gone. Nobody played the numbers anymore. And now you're going to legalize sports gambling. And in Virginia, and I think in Connecticut, you cannot bet on colleges in the state of Connecticut.
That is going to be, yes, when it does come to fruition, I think it's September, yes, state colleges.
Okay, so I just start gambling because I wouldn't gamble with a bookie because this is mythical. And so I start betting on sports. And I'm doing all right. I lose it, losing $500 a week, $100 a week, whatever it is. And then I want to bet on Connecticut. I went to Connecticut. My son goes there. My brother went there, whatever. And they say, you can't do that. Well, then I'm going to call somebody and say, do you know a bookie I can bet on? Oh, yeah, I got a bookie for you. It's going to increase the bookie's action. We need to get rid of the bookies. This not being able to bet on college sports in your state is, you can still bet on every other college in the country.
Yeah.
It's, when I started gambling, you could bet on the over, under, and the game. That was it. Okay?
Yeah.
And today you can bet on the over, under, in every quarter.
Oh, yeah.
You can bet on a game, even money or not.
Yeah.
They have all these proposition bets. It's much more addictive. Much more addictive.
Yeah, the prop betting. Yeah, you're right. You're right. The prop betting is how many base hits, how many pars on a golf course, how many three-pointers, Bob. All this stuff. I hear it on the commercials.
And that's where they get their edge. That's where they make most of their money. Okay? And casino gambling is absolutely, when you have blackjack on a computer, okay?
Yeah.
I've got friends who still gamble. I got a friend who was gambling. He was gambling online with blackjack.
Okay.
And he said, you know, Bob, I get out there and I start winning, and then I start betting. I'm betting $100 a hand, and then all of a sudden I won $1,000, and I start betting $500 a hand. And I said, well, and then it's, then I lose. I said, Dick, they know your tendencies. When you get up to 500, they want you to get to 500. You're willing to lose 500 when you're betting $100 a hand. You're willing to lose 1,500 when you're betting $500 a hand. Is that right? He said, 1,500, 2 grand. I said, don't you? They've got you right where they want you.
I never thought about it. Wow.
And he understood that, and he stopped betting online. But you're talking about if you can't beat a computer, okay? Just can't happen. And with sports betting, at least you have some chance, maybe.
Yeah.
If you don't do any prop bets, you might not get hurt that bad. As long as you don't chase, as long as you don't up your bets, as long as you don't bet on the whole card, which I did sometimes, you're not going to get hurt that bad. But when you start betting on every game and every over-under, and, it's online gambling is a trap that can really affect the people that have not been gambling and don't understand, and they just want to start doing it just to be able to watch. I'm only going to bet on TV games. I'm only going to bet $10 a game. Big deal. next thing you know, they're betting 20 and they're betting half the card. And before you know it, they're betting 100 and they're betting the whole card. And then they're betting 200 because they're trying to get back the first 100.
Bob, hang on. I want to continue this. This is fascinating. It's very enlightening. Robert W. Cabanis Jr. is the guest. Bob Cabanis, he's the founder of Williamsville Wellness and also Summit Hill Wellness. Bob, hang on. We'll be right back with you. Traffic and weather together coming up right here on WICC. Back to the open phones in just a few moments, a few more minutes to the bottom of the hour with Bob Cabanis. Now, Bob struggled for years with sports gambling, gambling addiction, long before it became chic now to do it online. We're getting that here in Connecticut in a few months, along with casino gaming as part of a deal between the state, the lottery, and the two Indian tribes. A couple of websites to check out, WilliamsvilleWellness.com. Run that all together, WilliamsvilleWellness.com, SummitHillWellness.com. A couple of sites that Bob has helped start and help get programs going for people, alcohol, substance abuse, and gambling. Bob, in the couple of minutes we have left here, do you have a warning? Do you have some words of wisdom to the people listening right now who know this is coming here, you know, barring our state Senate doing something which nobody expects them to do? They're going to rubber stamp this, Bob. Would you have any words of wisdom or warning for people listening right now, knowing that this will probably be here by the start of football season?
And football season is the biggest gambling season in the United States,
yeah,
without question. What I would say is one simple way that you can figure out how bad a shape you're in is if you look at it and you say, I lose my paycheck once a year, you're a problem gambler.
Interesting.
You lose it 2 to 5 times a year, you're a compulsive gambler. You lose it more than 5 times a year, you're a gambling addict. And any one of the three, you need to get different levels of care. Our SummitHillWellness.com has online gambling addiction treatment and online substance abuse and alcohol. We are a pioneer in that field, and that can especially help with getting at this first level, getting you on the right track. But there's so many different. If you get angry when you lose a bet, okay,
mm-hmm,
that's not a good sign, okay. Like the guy that beat his golf club all to death at the PGA tournament over the weekend.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not a good sign. That guy better not bet, okay. If he started gambling, he would get in big trouble normally. So anger issues are a definite. You don't want to gamble if you have anger issues, because you get angry. Yeah, you know, it's like I didn't really have a casino problem, except when I would go into a casino. If I sat down and the dealer, for some reason, the dealer was winning all the time, I'd say I'm going to beat this dealer. I don't like this dealer.
You made it personal.
Every time I did that.
So you made it personal.
Yeah, I made it a person. And I finally decided, you know, this is stupid. just stupid. Get up and leave, okay?
Yeah.
But that cost me, gosh, I don't know how much money, but it wasn't, in versus sports gambling, it wasn't enough to even worry about. But everything is relative. But I think, and if you get preoccupied the games, okay?
Yeah.
You know, you have to watch every, and God forbid, if you bet on the Hawaii game, which is like normally the last game played.
Yeah.
And you're doubling up to try to catch up, or you bet a lot more on Monday Night Football, all of these double up catch ups are not good signs. They're just not. Because that's where you get in real trouble.
And that's where you're chasing the money.
Okay.
And you're chasing the
that's
money.
Where you're chasing the money. Exactly. Exactly.
Bob Cabanis, Bob, we're out of time here. Let me give your websites once again for the Williamsville Wellness Center. It's WilliamsvilleWellness.com. Once again, WilliamsvilleWellness.com. And for the online counseling that's available, SummitHillWellness.com. Cabanas.com. A guy who has been talking from personal experience, Bob Cabanas. Robert, thank you so much for the time. We appreciate it. Good luck and have a happy day. We'll hook up in the future. Thank you.
Thank you again.
Appreciate it, Robert. Thank you. Well, folks, there you go. About that, huh? What did you think?
It's over 3 days, so even that's a number continuing the trend in the right direction. And a lot of that, of course, is due to vaccines. Very quickly, what you can see here is 65 and above. We got 93% of those folks vaccinated. Good news, they're the champions, 55 to 64, catching up a little over 80%. Both with what you might think of as herd immunity. Go to the other end of the spectrum, 12 to 15, we got about 25% of them vaccinated, and that's pretty good over a short period of time. The one anomaly, as we've talked about before, is 16 to 18-year-olds have a higher percentage vaccinated than 18 to 24 and 25 to 34, those so-called invincibles. But they're getting vaccinated. The number keeps going up. I was very happy to see that we've been downward trending in terms of the number of people getting vaccinated over the last 6 weeks or so. And this past week, we went up about 22%. You know, maybe half of that is related to the 12 to 15-year-olds. But the other half of that is people maybe feeling some of the incentives to get vaccinated. Maybe, you know, drinks on us got people inspired. Perhaps the president's declaration that you no longer have to wear a mask even indoors if you've been vaccinated, but only if you've been vaccinated, or whatever the reason, it's good news. And those of you who are holding out, here's your chance to step up, and there are additional reasons to do so. The vaccine incentives, this is a broader strategy, building off of drinks on us, is called Summers on Us. And just very quickly, these are folks who are coming to us with ideas, for which we're really appreciative. You know, on the left, you see all the, you know, mobile food trucks all down there off of I-95 in New Haven, that is. And we have a deal for the foreseeable future. You go down and get vaccinated at one of those facilities, for example, next to the food trucks, they'll give you a voucher to have a free meal at any of those food trucks down in New Haven. So, you're feeling hungry, here's an opportunity. Get a shot and get a free meal at any of those food trucks. On the right-hand side, you see amazing Lime Rock, a fascinating, fun place where, again, sign up, you go to Lime Rock, get a vaccination, and you'll get a free meal there, and it's really fun. They are open under new management. Worth taking a look. And if you want to find out more, you go to ct.gov COVID-vaccine/summer. And by the way, if you're hosting an event where you'd like a mobile vaccination van to come, you think you have a lot of people there, maybe some incentive program like you see at Lime Rock, like you see at the food trucks in New Haven, go online. You'll find out, A, where you can find these events, or B, how you can plan the event where we'll bring the vaccine truck right to you. All right. If we've learned many things over this last year together, but obviously the importance of healthcare, accessible, affordable healthcare for everybody. A lot of discussion in this building about how we continue to expand access to healthcare and start by making it more affordable. Just very quickly, some of the things we've done, going back now a year or two, we made our pricing more transparent with cost and quality benchmarks, so you can see where we are positioned against others, something Massachusetts did some years ago, representing significant savings, where you can see how you measure up compared to your peers. We use that as some leverage, reduced insurers' requested rates in 2021, saving you about $100 million. It was probably the lowest increase in insurance rates in recent memory. A lot of it is also COVID-related. There are a lot fewer elected surgeries going on. Those are relatively high cost. There's also insurance department working hard to leverage that and bring down insurance costs for you. And also, we challenged the insurers to give us more options on the exchange for small business. I come out of small business. I know how small business has been crushed by escalating insurance costs over the last couple of decades. I'm really pleased that not only did requested rate increases were virtually flat for this last year, We added on two new plans on the exchange so you have more choice. One is the Cigna / Oscar plan online, and the other is Anthem. I think both represent about a 10 to 15% savings. So some help to small businesses if that's the way you want to proceed. As you know, we waived all out-of-pocket costs for COVID testing and treatment this past year, thanks to our healthcare partners in helping us to do this. Wanted to make sure we took away any disincentive back then to get testing and now to get vaccinated. No out-of-pocket costs to you. We expanded telehealth, and though our friends in the legislature made that permanent, and that means healthcare is more broadly available to those of you who don't have to go all the way to a doctor's office. You can find a significant amount of what you had to do in person can now be done online, and that's thanks to the telehealth expansion. And finally, we signed the Best Paid Family and Medical Leave Act in the country. And I think that's really important. Deirdre and I today were at a Housatonic Community College. And what you can do with really strong prenatal support, which she'll talk about if you ask, and what we can do to provide better support for new moms in general. That's a head start for a mom, head start for their children, and that's what the Medical Leave Act helps provide. So the American Rescue Plan also supported our Access Health Exchange, otherwise known as Obamacare. It lowered premium for people who purchased their own coverage. In some cases, lowered premiums dramatically. Over half of our affordable or Access Health customers will now pay less than $16 per month, less than $16 per month. Individuals making up to $19,000, families of four making up to $40,000, less than $16 a month, zero premium, zero deductible. Individuals making more than $50,000, families of four making more than $100,000, will save on average $500 a month or $6,000 per year. As you know, we opened up a few weeks ago Access Health. It's going to stay open, I think, until August 15th. Close to 3,000 people are signing up to take advantage of this. And I urge you, if you're not insured, if you're a small business thinking about your options, this is something you ought to think about. It can make an enormous difference. I think overall, the bill says anybody can go on the exchange and you won't be paying more than 8.5% of your salary. So we're capping expenses, thanks to support from the federal government, in a way that can really expand access and reduce the cost of health insurance to you. Let's see. Connecticut CT can also build on the American Rescue Plan, because it's one thing to reduce premiums, but for many people, health care is still unaffordable due to the co-pays, due to the deductibles, due to those out-of-pocket expenses. So we've had a number of plans circulate around this building to think about how we can reduce costs. One is simply just to expand Medicaid to a higher income eligibility. And I hear another reason I'm really pleased that Deirdre Gifford is our Commissioner of the Department of Social Services. Previously, on behalf of federal government, she helped oversee Medicaid. So she has some insights into the best way to provide a low-cost health access to all of our people, especially those least able to afford it. And she has helped take the lead with Johnny Doc in terms of, rather than simply expanding Medicaid to about 8,000 people, which is one of the plans here, at that same cost to us, the state of Connecticut, to us, the taxpayers, rather than Medicaid expanding to 8,000 people, we have a plan to eliminate premiums and out-of-pocket costs for 34,000 people, four times as many people who otherwise wouldn't be able to afford health care. In addition, we'll be able to cover all dental and other services for those same 34,000 additional people. We'll be able to provide prenatal care for undocumented moms-to-be. We can extend Husky postpartum care from 2 months to 12 months. This is a plan that Deirdre's been working on. I'm so thankful for it. It allows us to expand coverage to many more people at a lot less cost than any of the other options we've been focused on. And some of this we have to pay for ourselves. That'll be done through an assessment on the insurance companies. They're getting a big tax cut courtesy of the federal government. They'll be getting a slightly smaller tax cut, and that allows us to provide expanded health care options with no co-pays or no deductibles for anybody that can't afford it. In addition, as you know, you've got to get to the underlying costs of health insurance, and that's the cost of health care. We're working hard on the hospitalization side, and we're working very hard when it comes to prescription drug costs. I mean, why is it that Americans pay three times more for drugs, pharma, than people in other developed countries, starting in Canada? Why are you paying that? You're paying that through your insurance premiums. You're paying that, in many cases, out of your co-pays and deductibles. So we've got a plan in place that we are trying to get passed through the legislature. We're doing this in association with Massachusetts and some others, where we would cap the increase, just the increase in pharma costs to 2% plus inflation. So they get their initial cost of the drugs, they get a rate of return on all the investment they've had to make and all the R&D. But rather than have sudden increases in cost thereafter, you remember what happened with insulin a while back, know what happened with EpiPens, that was notorious, where all of a sudden you need this, you've got it into your budget, you know what it's supposed to cost, and go up sometimes double and even triple digits. We're going to cap that to give you more security, know what's payable, and help use that to help reduce health care costs overall going forward. And this is taking the lead. I think you're going to see in Washington, D.C., a bipartisan similar plan led by Chuck Grassley to do something similar in Washington. But sometimes they needed state to take the lead. Connecticut, let's take the lead here and make health care more affordable for everybody. And finally, as I said before, COVID just revealed the incredible health care disparities as they impact the people. Black and brown, based on income, having much more severe impact, in this case by COVID, due to comorbidities and other other ongoing illnesses that they may have. That's why preventive care is so important. That's been a big piece of how we're going to prioritize our rescue plan money, universal home visiting, and community health workers. If I could have done one thing differently over the last 6 months, it was when we said we're going to prioritize people over the age of 75 for vaccines. That was good. That worked. That saved lives. But rather than say go to VAMS, go to an online sign-up, which was complicated for a lot of people, especially complicated for folks of a certain age, we've learned to complement what you're doing online. Going door-to-door, looking people in the eye makes an enormous difference. And that's what Deirdre's prioritized with universal home visiting and community health workers, doing everything they can so they know what options are available to them. For example, on the exchange for prenatal and postnatal care, going there for moms who otherwise wouldn't have access to a primary care doc, doing everything we can to make sure she and her kid get off to the best start in life. In addition, we're working on reducing unintended pregnancies. A significant additional support for our local health departments. They were thrust right into the front lines of this battle of COVID. They performed heroically, but they need more support. We're giving them that more support. Quality child care going forward, I think we discussed that before, the biggest expansion of child care in the history of the state. And Deirdre can tell you a little bit more about the improved data systems that are really important as we try and track the impact of healthcare on people and make sure that we're taking full advantage of that. These are what we're trying to do in terms of expanding access, reducing costs for healthcare, something that was reinforced and turbocharged as something of import over this last 14 months of COVID. So with that, Deirdre Gifford is here, of course, joined by Josh and Paul.
Channel 3 Eyewitness News.
Yes, Governor, this may have been brought up last week, but now that we do have Dr. Gifford on the call, I'd like to follow up. We're coming up on the six-month vaccination mark for the most vulnerable population. Any word on boosters for them and then eventually for the rest of us?
Welcome back, Deirdre.
It's looking like, at least for some populations, that booster shots may be recommended, but we don't have specifics yet, and we certainly don't have a timeline. So we are prepared for the fact that there may be a group, of some subgroup at least, of the vaccinated population that might need a booster shot. So we shouldn't be surprised by that, but we don't know when or for whom exactly yet.
Okay, and then the mass vaccination sites, they've really been a popular choice for families with eligible children. How much longer are they going to stay open? And then when they do eventually close, how's the state going to pivot to reach the unvaccinated population? I know that you just mentioned the door-to-door outreach is going to continue. Anything else?
Deirdre, Josh?
Sure. Yes, as you mentioned, our mass vaccination sites are starting to wind down because we've reached, a high level, as the governor said, of our population having received their first doses. But we still have plenty of places where people can get vaccinated. Our pharmacies are a huge part of the program. And they're plentiful and numerous, and walk-in appointments are available there. And we're also working more and more with our healthcare systems to start moving towards having more vaccine available in private physician offices and other offices. We're not quite there yet. We're still working on logistics with our federal partners there. We will continue to make sure that there are plenty of places where people can get vaccinated, even when the mass vaccination sites are closed down.
Thank you very much.
NBC Connecticut.
Hey, everyone. Catherine Loy with NBC Connecticut. Governor, have you spoken to the comptroller about the public option not going forward?
Oh, I talked to Kevin probably a couple weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago, about, some of my concerns, number one, not having the taxpayers underwrite the risk, and number two, playing on a level playing field compared to the other insurance entities. Things that came up when the public option was being discussed in the insurance committee, I think it was, a month or so ago.
And as far as the health insurance tax goes, we're hearing some pushback on that. Are you still behind that?
I'm still behind that. Look, you can decide. I don't want to ask the insurance companies to give up a little bit of their tax cut. Instead, that would mean that, poorer people would have to pay a little more copay and deductible. I'd opt on the side of making it more affordable on the healthcare side.